Josh is not here this morning. He is in LA for a wedding, so he is unable to be here. So my name is Dennis. I am the youth minister here, so I'm kind of taking his place this morning, and I have done a terrible job so far. But it's okay, because I know that Josh has lots of grace and love, so he will be okay with everything I've done so far. But before we start our new series, which is Kinetic, as we talked about a little bit, we have a couple more, you know, we have one more Sunday that kind of separates us from that kickoff. And so today, we're actually going to be in the book of Mark. We're going to be in the book of Mark. And we're just going to be looking real quick at a story that has really impacted my life. And as I went through this story before in my life, I was just like, it's absolutely nuts. But before we get started, this is a really good season. I used to sit, you know, as a kid, I used to think that summer was my favorite season. But the more and more I realize, I realize fall is my favorite season. And I feel like we have not entering into fall, because fall has all my favorite things, right? We have my favorite holiday, which is Thanksgiving, because it's a day about food, friends, family, fun, and football, right? It's five of my favorite things, right? It's like, so I love fall. It's also where, you know, I like to think, when I was younger, I thought Labor Day was the government's gift to me for my birthday. So I was like, every single birthday, I get that Monday off, right? It's like, that's wonderful. I love it. And I'm really egocentric. So I really love this. I really love this time of month. And of course, because, well, yesterday, for most of you, or maybe not most of you, for me, it was the start of college football season. Right. Who is a college football fan here? All five of you, we will hang out later. Right? And so college football starts every Labor Day weekend. And so I dragged Dana yesterday out into the city to go hang out with a whole bunch of University of Texas alumni, because that's what I do on my weekend, right? I go and we go and watch, you know, we go to this place and we go watch the game. Right? And I realized, as I was watching, and there's this anticipation, this excitement, because it's a new season. New things are coming. Like, all this stuff that happened last year doesn't matter anymore. And it's like that for us as well. The new, you know, the summer's gone, the new academic season's here, all that stuff in the past doesn't matter anymore. And so for every single fan, probably before Saturday, because some of y'all might have lost, for every single fan, maybe like on Thursday or Wednesday or Friday, it's a new season. You're excited because you have this faith, no matter how displaced it may be, you're like, this could be the year for your team. This could be the year that you win. And you might, you know, you look through all the stats and you might delude yourself into thinking that your team's really good. And so, you know, you have that faith. And right now, the Oakland A's are doing really well, right? For those who watch a lot of baseball, you realize that this might be the year we finally make it to the playoffs after years and years and years of nothing, right? And so it's like, this could be the year. And then you might place yourself and you have this faith that's like, you know, our pitching is top-notch, our hitting is timely, We're winning these games, and you have this faith. For a lot of the A's fans right now, they have this faith that we're going to make the playoffs and we're going to make a lot of noise, and this could be a really good year. But then there's people like me, who's from Houston, and I'm an Astros fan. And for those who don't watch or know anything about baseball, the Astros are absolutely terrible. There is no future to look ahead because there's no young players that are good. There's nothing, right? Like right now, the team we have, terrible. They're not better than most minor league teams. You know, and you look at like our minor league system, there's nobody. So it's like, oh, good. This year sucks. Next year will suck. The year after will suck. Maybe the next 10 years is going to be absolutely terrible. And like, there's absolutely, you know, it doesn't matter if the new season starts. Astros fans are going to be like, oh, well, you know, here's another 100 loss season if we're lucky. So what we've realized, or what I'm seeing, is like a lot of times faith for us, maybe in our sports team, is really dependent on what we see. Maybe we think that we have good players, so we're ready, like, you know, maybe this guy will get better. Maybe we have a future ahead. Maybe, you know, whatever team you're cheering for, you might have an all-star, like, in the making. You might have this, you know, new rookie, this new freshman, whatever. But in the worst possible situations, like for me and my team, the worst possible situation, that's when you don't see hope. That's when you don't see any potential of good. It'd be ridiculous to have any faith in going anywhere because there's no hope. There's no future. There's nothing. There's nothing in front of you. There is no glimmer of light. There is no ray of hope. I mean, how sad does that sound? So we are in Mark chapter 9. Mark chapter 9, and we see this man with no hope. There is no glimmer. There is no future. There is no what if. It seems pretty dark and gloomy. But the point of this passage that we're going to study today, that we're going to look through today, is that we are called to rely on Christ for everything, even our very faith. That we are called to rely on Christ for everything. Even our faith itself, we're called to rely on Christ on that. And it sounds kind of interesting, it sounds kind of odd, but let's look through this. Let's look through this real quick. We're in Mark chapter 9, and we're going to start with verse 14. And so, well, before we start in verse 14, there's a little backdrop of what's happening. So Jesus takes three of his closest disciples, Peter, James, and John, goes up to the mountain, and they have this really crazy spiritual experience. Right? We call it in Scripture the Transfiguration. In short, what that really was this, you know, these historical spiritual figures in the Bible appears out of nowhere. You hear, you know, God the Father once again like affirms that Jesus is his son, and you got Peter, James, and John going, holy cow, right? Like, this is nuts. They just saw this amazing account. And they saw this amazing thing. It's like they're blown away. Right? They're blown away with what's going on. So after that, they're coming down, and this is immediately what happens, right? So they're up in this mountain, they see all these things, and we're like, this is crazy, this is amazing, this is the Son of God. Oh, and they come down to the mountain, this is what happens. In verse 14. And it says, when they came to the disciples, which were the other nine guys that were left behind, when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, what are you arguing about with them? And someone from the crowd answered him, teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able. And he answered, this is Jesus speaking, he answered them, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. So immediately we see, from the get-go, right, we see a problem. We see this problem. What's going on? So Jesus comes down from this mountain with his three disciples. He sees his other nine disciples, these other nine followers, these guys that are learning from Jesus. He sees these other nine guys arguing with these scribes. And who are these scribes? They're these guys in an area, so it's like they're fighting. Big debate. And so what we find out is that these disciples were there. This man comes up to the disciples and goes, hey, my son is greatly ill. He has this mute spirit with him. Pretty much, he has this, like, he's demon-possessed, and I just need you to heal him. I need you to heal him. And so the disciples try to heal him, and they were not able to. But if we read earlier in Mark chapter 6, Jesus gives the authority to the disciples to heal and to cast out spirits. So Jesus, like, you know, a little while back, Jesus has already told the disciples, I have given you this authority, this power to do this. Right? So the disciples probably get there, and they've done this plenty of times before. So this is not like their first time. This is nothing new. They've probably done this before. They see, okay, you know, all right, I see what's going on. And they're probably like, you know, you're healed. Nothing happens. They're like, like, what's going on? Maybe you should try. And maybe another disciple comes up like, no, nothing. And so these disciples were not able to heal this boy. And so they're probably freaking out a little because they're like, what's going on? What's happening? And I was like, this used to work. It's not working anymore. And then we got these scribes. And so back then, you know, exorcism and stuff like that, I wouldn't say they were common, but it happened, right? And so they had all sorts of different rituals to, you know, do these things. And so even the scribes, they have these rituals and they feel like, you know, you have to do these things and they have like, you know, one of them is like you have a root and you're supposed to like make them smell the root so the spirit would go away. And they have all these random, I guess, rituals for them to exorcise the demon. And they have different ideas and thinkings. And so when they see this, they're like, hey, it's time for us to pounce. And they're like, clearly your teacher is not who he says he is. Right? It's like, clearly your teacher is not who he says he is. And he's like, we got a problem here. These disciples are supposed to represent Jesus. These disciples failed. And so this, when Jesus comes down from the mountain, he sees this arguing. You know, he sees the arguments. He knows what's going on. But he's turning it to him. Right? So he asks this question. It's not like he doesn't know. It's not like he doesn't hear. He asks his disciples this question. And you got this guy in the crowd call out and says, I brought my boy to you. Your disciples couldn't heal him. He says, your disciples were not able. He's saying, your disciples were, literally what they're saying, your disciples were not strong enough. Your disciples didn't have the strength. Your disciples didn't have the strength. And we see immediately what Jesus says is that guys don't have enough faith. Right? He says in verse 19, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. So how many of us are in that place this morning where faith is actually not too easy to come by? Right? Whatever situation we might have, whatever situation we're seeing, like, it's pretty difficult to have faith. You might be in the shoes of the disciples where you think you have that faith and you realize something's not going right, or maybe you're in the shoes of this man with this son. And he's like, what's going on? Right, the problem right now we're seeing, the problem that's being addressed and laid down in the story, right, we see this problem. There's no faith. There's a lack of faith. And Jesus kind of sets this story to see what's going to happen. He's like, well, what's going to happen next? Right, as people are reading this, what's going to go on? What's happening? We see the situation happen. We see what's going on. The boy's not healed. Disciples couldn't heal them. What's going on? For us, we might be in a position where it's like, man, what in the world's going on, right? Like, I've called out and I've talked to people, I'm doing things. I have no idea what's going on. Right, if we are totally honest with ourselves today, maybe some of us are in that beginning of this story. No confidence. Or nothing. You don't see what's going on in front of you. You have this problem and you're going, What am I to do? And it seems in the moment, what can I do? What am I supposed to do? How am I to respond? And so let's keep on reading to see what happens. What happens in this story? And we keep on reading from verse 20. It goes, then they brought and they brought the boy to him, and when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, and has often cast him into the fire and into water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help him. And Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible for one who believes. Immediately, the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. I love what's going on. So Jesus asks him this simple question. He gets him to bring the boy to him and asks this man a simple question. He goes, how long has this been happening? Jesus is not here like trying to figure out the symptoms and like what he needs to do. He asks this question for a very specific reason. He wants this man to reflect and see how desperate his situation is. This boy has been like this since childhood. So just from that, we realize it's been a long time. It's probably been a very long time. This is probably not the first person he's gone to before. He's probably gone far and wide looking for someone to heal this boy. The situation seems so dark and gloomy. There's no hope in here. And we even see, you can hear dripping from the man's words as he says, if you are able, please do something. There's already doubt filled in his voice as he's pleading to Jesus. He's not really sure if Jesus can do anything for his situation. But he's going, well, take a shot in the dark. I don't know, you know. I can't. He doesn't even believe what Christ is going to do. I don't know, just, as I read this, I'm just like, the story just resonates with me. He comes up, this man's so desperate for something. Has no faith in Christ. And we hear Christ respond. Right? And you kind of hear maybe the little annoyance in his voice. But you also hear a whole bunch of grace for this man. All right, so Jesus already said, oh, faith. You know, he already had this little thing. He goes, oh, faithless generation. He's already kind of addressed this here. Come on, guys. Why is there no faith? And then this man comes and goes, if you are able to do anything for me, I'm not really sure if you can do anything for me, Jesus, but if you can, please do something. And Jesus goes, it's not if I can. The question is not my power or ability. He turns it around on him, on the man, and he goes, it's about your faith. Do you believe? He goes, it's not if I, he goes, if I can. Right? He's going, he's like, if you can. That's how he gives the response, if you can. All things are possible for one who believes. And Jesus gives this kind of like, all right, let's try this again. Let me give you a second chance at this. He's going, he turns back and goes, I see how dark, how hard, how impossible your situation looks like. But it's not about me or my power. And he turns it back onto the man. Where are you right now? Where are you? Where's your faith? And here's the crazy thing. Because as church and as Christians, we think, well, the right response should be like, yes, I believe, full of faith, right? No doubt whatsoever. That's what we think it should be. You know, especially for those who've been in church so long, we're just like, you need to have more faith. More faith, right? Just you're expecting the story where this man goes, yes, complete faith, or forget it, I'm leaving, I don't believe it, and then nothing happens. That's what we expect. That's what we were probably taught. That's what we see most of the time. But no, it's not. And I think that's the thing that, what I love about the story so much. Like, there's really, honestly, like, I thought as I was preparing through this sermon, I'm going, what examples I can give? What illustration I can give? I'm like, there's nothing. This story speaks for itself. The scripture just speaks for itself. And this man goes, I believe. Help my unbelief. I believe. Help my unbelief. You can hear this desperation. You can hear him just going, this is all I can bring to you, Jesus. I put it down. This is it. This is all I have. And he's probably going, I know it's not enough. But this is all I can give. You need to provide the rest. As we go back to what is the point of this passage? We are to rely on Christ for everything, even our very faith. And we see this man going, I'm going to rely on you, even when I feel like I can't. This is all I can give. Here's my faith. Here's my doubt. I give it all to you. I don't know how many times in my life I have prayed this prayer. And I don't know how many of y'all are out there that feel this way, where sometimes the situation looks just terrible in your life. And you want to have that faith. You want to walk out that door of your house, standing up, head up, and going, you know, I believe my Savior is going to redeem this situation. He's going to take care of me. And I have no, like, I know how terrible it looks, but I am not afraid. And you just walk out there. I'm just fearless. I'll be honest, I'm not like that. I would pray and I would know. Like, I know God is powerful. I know God is strong enough. I know what He can do. But at the same time, I'm not 100% sure. I want to be. I do. I really want to be. But if I'm really honest with myself, in the darkest of times, man, it sure feels hard. It feels difficult. And I don't know how many times I've prayed this prayer, oh God, I believe that you're there. I believe that you're strong. I believe that you care for me. I believe that you will come for me. I believe that you'll redeem the situation, that you'll bring healing. I believe that you can do this. I believe that you're merciful. I believe you're compassionate. I believe that I am your child and that you have the best in mind for me. I believe that. But help my unbelief. Because there is a part of me that fights it all. That fights it. The very core of me is a part that holds on to you and a part that just fights you. I believe. But help my unbelief. And you think this prayer is like, Jesus is like, what? Come on. Really? You're going to still have doubt? I'm here in the flesh in front of you. And you're still going to have doubt? doesn't respond in this way. He doesn't respond in this way. And I think that's the beauty of it. He doesn't respond like that. Jesus says, "You're not enough is enough. You might not feel like you have enough. And honestly, it's not enough. But in Jesus' economy, he says, you know what? It's enough." And we look at verse 25 through 29. "And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, 'You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again.' And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, 'He is dead.' But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, 'Why could we not cast it out?' And he said to them, 'This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer.'" The man wasn't good enough. He didn't have enough. But he had an honest and real prayer. "Here's my faith. Here's what I believe. Here's my doubt. I don't want to doubt." And you know he doesn't want to. Because I'm just honest with you, Jesus, right now. I believe and I don't at the same time. And that's my prayer. And look what Jesus does. He answers both of his prayers. Jesus answers both of his prayers. First, he heals the boy. He heals the boy. And it's amazing to see how he does it. He just speaks the word and it's done. I mean, this guy has been bringing his boy probably all around. And they probably have all different rituals. You know, like I said earlier, one of the things that they do, they make him smell a root and they do all these things and they have to, you know, they tried all these different ways to try to get this spirit out of him. But Jesus doesn't have to do any of that. There is no talking with the spirit. There is no compromise. There's no negotiation. He just speaks it and it's done. Boy's healed. Just speaks into that situation. He could have done it any time, but he decides to do it now. He just speaks into it. Boy's healed. He answers that prayer. But he answers the second prayer. He helped this man's unbelief. He helped this man's unbelief. He goes, "I see you have doubt. And I see you don't want to have it. I see you really want to trust me. But you're still a part of you holding back. I will show you what little faith can do. So you won't have to not believe anymore. So you won't have to have those doubts the next time around." He helped this man's unbelief. And I'm just like, that's just crazy. And I love at the end, the disciples comes up and goes, "Why couldn't we do it?" And Jesus goes, "This stuff comes through prayer. This stuff comes through prayer." And he's like, that's too simple of it. That's too simple of an answer. Prayer? But the thing is, prayer is a sign of desperation and faith. And I know a lot of times, for me, I'm pretty sure a lot of might feel this as well, I don't like it when there's hard times in my life and I go to someone, like a friend, a brother, and he's like, "Man, life is so difficult right now," and I'm just kind of pouring out how hard it is, how my doubts, my lack of faith. And you know how sometimes when you get that Jesus answer, just pray. Which is kind of what Jesus says, right? Just pray. Pray more. This stuff can't be driven out except through prayer. But I think what I realized as I was struggling through it's like, just pray. That's it? You just pray more. Maybe a lot of us here we're not doing that enough. Maybe that's where the doubt comes in. That's where we don't see Jesus work and move because there isn't enough prayer. Because we're not relying on Christ. And maybe the answer that we don't want to hear is the answer we really need. Whereas like, hey, you know, the brother could be saying, I'd love to hear you and hear you out, and I'll try to help the best I can, but honestly, I can only do so much. Why don't you just talk to Jesus about it? Right? Like, instead of coming to me, why not go to Christ? And it's like, we don't want to hear that, but it's going, I don't got power, he does. Why don't you go talk to him? I think a lot of times for me in my life, when things are going well, and maybe not even when things are going well, when there's a routine, you know how to handle it. You stop having faith. Because you know how to handle the situation. You know your limitations. You know what the situation requires, and you just do it. And if you don't have it, you go and get prepared. You prepare yourself, and you go and do it. And I think this message today is not for those who are desperate, but for all of us, for those who might not think we need the faith when we think that we can do it on our own. This is a ridiculously simple message, but incredibly difficult to grasp. To rely on Christ for everything. Everything in our life. Good times, bad times, everyday life. To be honest with him and cry out to him daily through prayer. And these are things, these are not anything new. Yet when I read this, I go, why? Why does it seem so different this time? Church, my question is, man, what would it look like? What would it look like if we spent more time praying and more time being honest with him? Maybe if we were honest with our doubts, and not just honest with them, but crying out to Christ, I don't want to have these doubts anymore. Answer my prayers. Show me more. You think this man had that much unbelief the next time around when he saw Christ work? Probably not. And maybe the next time after that, the next time after that. This man probably was not like this in this state anymore because he saw Christ work. Christ helped his unbelief. Next time around, would he have unbelief? Maybe. I know I do. But it's a little less because we saw Christ work the time before. And the time after, and the time after, and the time after. When are we going to start being honest with him and waiting and expecting him to move? Let's pray.